Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at winbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Dr. Stephen Browdy, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888. Need an area code first. 888-627-6008. So, Bob, what's up with you tonight?
Well, during lunch today, I was perusing the internet, as I sometimes do, and I saw a couple of interesting things. One report, there's a Chelsea Handler has a talk show. I haven't seen it, but the author was writing that she had, as her guest, Reese Witherspoon. And Handler asked Witherspoon, what happens, what does she think happens after people die? And Reese had said that, well, I think we go to heaven, which prompted Chelsea Handler to go on about, first she said she remains very skeptical about religion, but she started to share stories about her own encounters with the supernatural. She talked about how a medium managed to channel the spirit of her late mother, and that event almost convinced her to have faith in a higher power. Witherspoon suggested that she's had experiences that have proven to her that death isn't the end. She said, this is just me. I really believe it. I've had car accidents. I've given birth to babies. I swear my grandparents are in the room. I've seen my grandfather in a theater in New York when I was on the stage. I know it. So, that's pretty interesting. The first thing that comes to mind, and we're always happy when we see, well-known people talk about their experiences,
right,
not be afraid that it's going to hurt their career at all. But I thought it was interesting, number one, I don't know whether this was the reporter or whether this is what, she had said, but they said that Chelsea Handler said how a psychic managed to channel the spirit of a late mother.
Oh.
That's, again, what we talk about. People just do not see any difference between,
And that's what causes a huge problem, because you have these gypsies in these storefronts with the neon signs and the palms flashing on and off. First of all, they're frauds to begin with. And second, psychic is so different from mediumship, which is really honoring spirit and what comes from another world.
Yeah. And, the other thing that came to mind is that when Handler was talking about these events and how it almost convinced her to have faith in a higher power. So, she still wasn't convinced, even, having that. But you equate the this automatically with having faith in a higher power. You could believe that we can communicate with the dead without making the assumption that a higher power is involved, right? A lot of people, think of it in terms of religion.
Right, but do you think that was what she was referring to when she was using the words higher power?
Maybe.
It could just be another world,
right?
Higher power, something that's much more organized than we are here.
Yeah, I also came upon, while we're on that subject, a study that was done, a team of three universities, San Diego State University, Florida Atlantic University, and Case Western. They did a study mainly about religion and the afterlife, and they found that Fewer Americans say they believe in God or pray regularly, yet more people believe in an afterlife nonetheless. Interesting.
Well, it's funny that they say nonetheless, because they're trying to equate the two, and the two are totally different.
Yeah, it goes on to say, it's a generational thing, with the millennials the least likely generation to say they're religious. And then the author said he found it interesting that fewer people participated in religion, but more believed in an afterlife. And he says it might be part of a growing entitlement mentality, thinking you can get something for nothing.
Well, there is that growing entitlement mentality, particularly in the millennium. So I can see how he draws that conclusion, but not necessarily so.
Yeah. Well, why do you think more people believe in an afterlife today?
I think there's a huge inner knowing that's part of this consciousness shift that we keep talking about. I mean, it just becomes more and more evident. We're hearing more and more people who have afterlife encounters. We have more and more people who recall having experiences when they were young children, and then it stopped. And obviously it stops because we become so embedded in the physicality of the world that we live in, we don't allow it to happen anymore.
Yeah, but also that's true. But I think another factor is what we've discussed, you know, before. When people say they believe in an afterlife, a lot of them are really saying that they hope. I mean, they look at the state of the world today, and it's comforting, you know, to think that we go to a place, because our existence is so tenuous. I mean, life can be extinguished at any time in a world filled with terrorism and natural disasters and famine and droughts and you know, other natural disasters. So, you know, hope is logical.
Yeah, but I think hope reaches back, you know, through the archives of organized religion. That's a whole different kind of thinking than I think what you're seeing cropping up now is an inner knowing that there is something bigger out there and that life does not end with the death of the physical body.
Yeah, I think there certainly is a movement in that direction. And as in the first story, a good sign, as superficial as that might be, is when these celebrities don't fear anymore that their careers are going to be, you know, challenged by admitting things like this. Some of them, I think, sometimes talk about these so-called supernatural occurrences to actually boost their Q rating.
In this case with Chelsea Handler, it was her own show.
Yeah.
So she was safe. But I recall when she was on Howard Stern, she didn't bring up the subject at all. He's not a believer.
Right.
So. As much as they are celebrities, they still are guarded in how they promote themselves and what they say. This topic is hot. It's popular right now. Of course, they would want to ride this trend publicly,
right,
when they can.
I know we're going to go to a break. You could want to just briefly mention, I see you have an article over there about this person who had an NDE, I think, and she's also an artist.
She's a Brooklyn-based artist. Her name is Caledonia Curry. She calls herself Swoon, S-W-O-O-N. Doesn't explain why she uses that name. But she had an afterlife encounter, which she termed a shared death experience, when her mother died, totally in a different state. And she had this experience of moving through, for lack of a better description, a forest of snowflakes that were coming in and going right through her body. And she goes on and she describes what happened after that and after that
I see she's beautiful.
They're gorgeous.
Paintings.
They're not. It's actual a live display of her art that you can walk through so that you can experience what she experienced in this shared death experience. And it's not, unfortunately, it's not on display in Brooklyn where she is. It is, see if I can quickly find the place. But the basis of this whole thing was that her, when she woke up from this experience, when she came back to herself, and she got a phone call from her sister that her mother had died.
Oh.
And it was during this experience that she felt that she was receiving this unconditional love and this light and this healing directly from her mom. And it changed her so that even after the funeral, she could not bring herself to go into a typical mourning or a typical grief because she felt so wonderful after the experience, with this sense of knowing that we still live on. So it's a fabulous display of art and experience.
Interesting. We're going to go to a break. We come back. We're going to have our guest, Dr. Stephen Browdy. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more. The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The sign registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Stephen Browdy. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research and Human Potential, and they could be found on the web at winbridge.org. Bob.
And Dr. Stephen Browdy is a philosopher and a parapsychologist. He's past president of the Parapsychological Association, editor-in-chief of the Journal of Scientific Exploration, emeritus professor of philosophy and chair of the department at the University of Maryland, and he's a member of FFF Scientific Advisory Board. He's the recipient of several grants and fellowships, including research fellowships from the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Bial Foundation in Portugal. He's published more than 60 philosophical essays. By now, it's probably a higher number. He's written 6 books. Let's see if we can mention them all. ESP and Psychokinesis, The Limits of Influence, First Person Plural, Immortal Remains, my favorite, and The Gold Leaf Lady and Other Parapsychological Investigations. And his latest book is Crimes of Reason on Mind, Nature, and the Paranormal, a collection of essays. And incidentally, it was previously only available in hardcover, and now the paperback and much more affordable edition is out. As far as a website, I didn't mention that Stephen's also an accomplished musician, so he has a whimsical website, jazzphilosopher.com. Welcome, Steve.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back on the show, although, frankly, I think we have to stop meeting like this.
Yeah, I know. what I wanted to get into, because I never have an opportunity to ask you this stuff, but let's talk about psi phenomena. I mean, we notice that the majority of people that we come across, including some researchers, they automatically assume that if somebody has psi ability, that ability spans the spectrum of all types of psi ability. I mean, for example, in our work, we constantly see people assume that anyone who is psychic can automatically communicate with discarnate spirits. So I know you've written about this subject extensively. I know there's an essay in Crimes of Reason. So this assumption that everybody can do everything, that's problematic, is it not?
Well, of course. It would be unprecedented in the realm of human abilities. If you think about musical abilities, for example, somebody who has compositional skills doesn't necessarily have the ability to write in all forms or in all idioms. An athlete good at baseball may not be a good football player, and so on and so on. So there's no reason at all to think that a psychic who can do remote viewing should also be able to levitate a table, just to take one example.
Yeah, so I mean that also affects laboratory research, because you know, I guess we have to be more careful in picking our subjects. You know, researchers look for intuitive people, and maybe those intuitive people can't do the specific exercise that they're looking for them to perform.
Well, that's for sure. But I have an extreme view about this, as you probably know, and it's that laboratory research in parapsychology is almost absurdly premature, because we have no idea what the natural history of psi abilities might be, that is, what its role or function might be outside the lab. And so we have no idea what it is we're trying to bring into the lab and whether it's even appropriate to do so. We know when we look at the entire spectrum of human abilities, there are lots of things which can only be studied in real-life context. If you want to study a tennis player's ability to return serves, you actually have to see how the player performs during the pressure of an actual match. Some people practice better than they play, some play better than they practice, but even when you ignore that, The fact is you can only study a tennis player's ability to return serves when opponents are trying their hardest to win.
Right. And as you point out, I mean, sometimes just what you can do with certain aspect of whether it be sport or music or exhibiting sai, but when you put in a position of performing, or that in itself might affect the process. Maybe some people just can't perform under pressure.
Well, in that sense, it would be like the ability to be sensual, the ability to sing. There was a TV show a number of years ago on BBC and Nova in the U.S. called The Case for ESP, and the psychologist C.E.M. Hansel was interviewed, stupid man, and he said, it should be easy for someone to demonstrate that they have telepathic abilities. They just have to tell me what I'm thinking. And I'm very sorry that the interlocutor for that interview didn't say, is that right, Professor Hansel? Well, perhaps you'd like to demonstrate an erection for us. I'm sure Hansel would have swiftly rejected the conclusion that if he couldn't perform right then, he was simply unable to get it
right up. Right. That certainly would hit home. Another subject you write about is something I'm often confused when I write about mediums, like if I'm writing a promotional piece or for whether it be an article or a flyer. And what do I call what mediums do? Do I call it a gift? Do I call it an ability? Do I call it a skill? Sometimes I use all the words interchangeably and because they seem to overlap. But I mean, how would you term what a mental medium does?
Well, it's at very least an ability, I would say. I mean, in Crimes of Reason, I try to make an artificially precise distinction between capacities and abilities and skills, but I don't want to get bogged down here in that. I mean, it's obviously something that seems to be a kind of natural capacity, but it's more complex and more refined than just the ability to breathe or swallow, for example. So those might be mere capacities. So it's something higher on the continuum of human capacities or human endowments.
Mm.
Whether it counts as a skill, like the skill of being able to write a string quartet or play professional level tennis, whether it reaches that, I'd say, has to be determined on a case-by-case basis, because some people are clearly more adept at this than others.
Mm. Another.
Does that really answer your question?
Well, it does. You know, I mean, when I always, in lay terms, I always thought of it, if it was something that you were so-called born with, an inherent, I don't know how to describe it without getting into the terms, but I always thought of it like mediumship would be an inherent ability, which I would term as a gift. And then when they learn how to use that gift, then it becomes a skill. I mean, that's awfully simple. But
that much I think is right. But one thing, when I mentioned earlier that we don't know what the natural history of Psi is, one of the big questions that we still haven't been able properly to answer is whether Psi abilities are uniformly distributed among people, like the ability to breathe, but whether some people have the ability to manifest this in interesting ways on demand. We don't know whether psi abilities are like that or whether they're unevenly distributed like musical or athletic abilities. I think that's one of the big unanswered questions, and we just don't know.
Shifting gears a bit, when we when I started reading about all this stuff and I started reading about poltergeist activity, everybody that I read unequivocally said that poltergeist activity was RSPK, recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, and it was usually traced to an adolescent who exhibited strong emotions in the house or the place where these things were occurring. So, I mean, that seemed plausible to me, but then I read cases where such activity takes place when the home is empty. Logically, I said, how can that be traced to, an emotional adolescent? So, I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, are you open to the possibility that there could be spirit involvement in poltergeist activity, or do you also subscribe to the theory that everything's RSPK.
No, I wouldn't jump to the conclusion that everything is RSPK. I mean, there is a rough and ready distinction between haunting cases and poltergeist cases. And the rough and ready distinction is that haunting cases are place-centered, that is, the phenomena tend to stick around a certain location, and poltergeist cases are person-centered. And the reason they're considered person-centered is that once you identify the person, usually if the person moves to a different location, the phenomena follow. But
right.
We have to be careful here, because there's no reason why people have to create poltergeist-like occurrences only in their immediate vicinity. I mean, it's possible, I would think, for them to produce it in other locations as well.
Mm.
So just because the person isn't present at the location, we can't really trace the causal lines very carefully. But there are borderline cases in this particular domain, and I frankly don't know how to sort it all out either. So I understand your uncertainty about all this, and I share it, actually.
Oh, good. I'm glad. If you share something that I'm confused about, it makes me feel better. So let's talk a little bit about, I know you've conducted research with physical mediums, and on that subject, I know most of them attribute these various PK activities, such as levitations and table tilting and trumpet movements and so forth. They all seem to say that they're manifestations created by discarnate entities, you know, with the help of the sitters present. So I think back to the days that you describe when you were in college and you and some of your friends were able to levitate a table. I mean, when you think back, what did you suspect was at play at that time? Did you immediately think that there was spirit involvement, or did you think that you and your friends were making this table rise?
Well, back in grad school when this happened, I was too naive to have any clear thoughts, but it was hard to seriously entertain that the ostensible communicators were what they claimed to be, because one of the communicators claimed to be the mythical River Styx. And so I didn't really think that the mythical River Styx was communicating with us.
Right.
As we've discussed in previous interviews, one of the things I do believe about all of this is that the reason the great mediums and the best mediums have been as good as they are is because they're actually able to deflect responsibility for the phenomena that occur, because they really sincerely believe that they are what they claim to be, that is, mediums, that they're just mediating the phenomena, not actually causing it. And think how that lets them off the hook psychologically no matter what happens.
Mm.
So if no phenomena occur, or if only uninteresting phenomena occur, the medium doesn't have to feel like she was a failure. She can always attribute the phenomena or lack of them to an inept communicator or to a bad link with the spirit world. And even more important, I suspect, is that when good phenomena occur, the medium doesn't have to think, good grief, you know, if I can do this in the safe confines of a seance, who knows what kind of havoc I might be wreaking when the seance is over.
Mm.
Uncontrolled psychic events.
Right. So when you you have conducted research, you know, with physical mediums. Now, I know you're also conducting research with. I don't know if your subject in Argentina is considered to be a medium, but I know you were investigating the table levitations he was capable of.
They weren't full levitations, but he does raise a table with very little contact. And under very clear conditions and bright light and so on. His name is Ariel, and Ariel does not think he's a medium. He believes he is doing this himself. And in that sense, he connects more to standard kinds of PK sitter groups, you know, where people just sit around a table and try to make a table move, or like the Philip group in Canada, which invented a communicator and ostensibly got table movements and communications from this fictitious character.
So when Ariel is, and I've seen some video, when he is conducting these table levitations, there aren't a lot of people sitting around. As I recall, there was just, you know, one other person, you know, plus you as the researcher, but it would be hard to then attribute it to the combined energy of the people in the room. It's clearly, he seems to be doing it under his own, using his own abilities.
Well, this is the conundrum that we always have when we deal with paranormal effects. I mean, it's more acute in laboratory situations where we have no idea who might be responsible for whatever is happening. I think when you have a subject who can, like Ariel, who can, or the great physical mediums like D.D. Hume, for instance, who can produce interesting phenomena with different sets of people present and under a great variety of conditions, you at least have a prima facie case for saying that the medium or the subject is responsible or largely responsible for what's going on, even if other people in the vicinity may have some input as to the magnitude of the effect or the way it shakes out, however it shakes out.
Mm.
And I think that's true with Ariel. I think Ariel is really doing this. He can be influenced positively or negatively by the people present, but I think he is the principal causal agent.
Mm. So, I mean, how does he describe the process to you? I mean, does he talk about things like focusing focusing his energy or emitting some sort of waves? Or, I mean, does he give you any insight into how he's accomplishing these things?
It is a kind of focusing effect for him, and he feels as if his hands are more or less merging with the table.
Hmm. And sometimes when nothing or very little happens, as opposed to other times when dramatic things occur, how does he explain that? It's just the way that it is, or he has no idea?
He hasn't yet figured it out. He's really just discovering all this about himself, which is one of the reasons he's actually rewarding to work with, because he has no philosophical pretensions about any of this. He's not a professional psychic. He's just a regular guy who discovered that he has the ability to do this. And so it's exploratory for him as well as for us.
Mm.
So,
I mean, does he work exclusively with table levitations, or does he, you know, movements of objects in the room, or, you know, the full gamut, or does he really focus mainly on tables?
Well, he has the controlled phenomena just have to do with tables, but
right.
He has a history since his early teens as being a poltergeist agent. It all began with the death of his father and some things that happened soon thereafter, but to this day, when Ariel gets agitated, things have a tendency to fly off shelves.
Hmm. We've heard that before, right?
Yeah.
When physical mediumship, I mean, when you've sat in seances and observed what goes on, you know, with physical mediums, the levitations, I know the reason I mentioned about the group before is that I know that's what a physical mediums have said to me, was that in order for these things to happen, you know, that the spirit entities, the discarnates, have to feed or use the energy of the sitters present, and they, you know, you raise the vibration, and sometimes they do that by singing songs and so forth. So is that consistent among all the physical mediums?
It's the standard story. Whether it's true or not remains to be determined, but it would make sense from a spiritist point of view, for sure.
Mm. And I know that your research has been a little, you know, sometimes the things that the mediums do are quite extraordinary, and sometimes not so much, you know.
Right.
And I know we've seen in history even some of the great physical mediums have been caught cheating from time to time, but that didn't necessarily mean that they were cheating all the time.
No, I mean, the classic case of that is the famous case of Eusebia Palladino, who even admitted she would cheat if given the chance. I mean, this was how she made her living. She would be very happy to resort to cheating if she didn't respect the investigators, or if they treated her badly, or if they just made it easier for her to cheat. But the fact is, she was tested under very tight conditions by people supremely well qualified to do so, and who knew all the tricks of the trade, who knew what Eusapia's standard tricks were. And the reason Eusapia was caught cheating was because she wasn't very good at it. Her tricks tended to be relatively simplistic, so that anybody who was moderately competent at doing that kind of investigation would have found them out very easily.
Yeah, and from what I read, she liked screwing with the researchers, too. So that's that was part of, I guess, part of it, too. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we have lots more to talk about with Dr. Stephen Browdy. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death. Heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Stephen Browdy. Our sponsor is the Windbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. and they can be found on the web at windbridge.org. We'd like to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website regularly for all events and announcements. That's foreverfamilyfoundation.org. There are still spots left to sign up for our first annual mediumship convention the weekend of November 11th through 13th. And this is another first of its kind, a convention totally dedicated to the world of mediumship, run by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, taught by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, and spirit communication conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums. Reservations can be made on our website, and as always, please keep in mind our no-refund policy before making your reservations. Our annual Holidays Past raffle is up and waiting for your entries to support the great work of our 100% volunteer organization. Win up to 5 medium readings in our drawing set for December 23rd. The mediums in this year's raffle are Catherine Nadal, Heidi Jaffe, Tracy Lee Nash, Renata Santarelli, and Lee Ashley. And this just in, we have a scheduled Holidays Past event in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey on December 10th at 7 p.m. with mediums Joe Scheel and Janet Nohavik. Sign up soon as this event fills quickly each year. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, Great Nonprofits, and WellZoo. And lastly, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Back to you, Bob.
And before we get rolling again, it'd be a good time to take a listener call, so why don't we do that now?
Dr. Browdy, I wanted to say that I'm considering getting involved in a seance, but I'm kind of concerned about a story one of my uncles told me. When he was in his early 20s, he went to a seance and a table was moving around the room on its own, but every time he would silently recite the Lord's Prayer, and he didn't tell anybody he was doing this, the table, he swears, would stop, but whenever he stopped saying it, it would move again. And he kept doing this, trying to prove that it was directly, you know, involved. So anyway, my question is there any evidence that people who go to these seances or involve themselves in physical mediumship suffer anything like nightmares or headaches or feelings of being attacked by spirits? Or is there any evidence that there's actually a problem with participating in this?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, certainly people's imagination can get the best of them, and if imagination is powerful enough, it can produce its own effects. But I don't think the seance is directly responsible for any of those things.
Okay. Well, thank you
very much. So I'd go for it.
Oh, don't be afraid, Brian. Do it.
Do it, Brian.
Thank you, Fran and Bob.
All right. Take care, Brian.
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Steve, I'm fascinated with a subject that you've written about over the years, and that's, you know, prodigies and savants. And when I try to reason it out, how they can do what they can do, I mean, I can't reasonably make the argument that they have these hidden, extraordinary gifts of math and music, you know, in the recesses of their physical brains. So then I start to think, well, then it's more logical that their minds or their consciousness, you know, connects with information that's not usually accessible to most people. I mean, are savants evidence that the mind can act independently of the brain?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, but the fact is we don't really understand savants, and we don't understand prodigies. We don't understand quite a lot when you come right down to it about human abilities. And so the reason I've been particularly interested in savants and prodigies is that it reminds us just how little we understand. And that's important when we try to interpret much of what goes on in cases of mediumship, where mediums, for example, exhibit some capacities or knowledge that they wouldn't ordinarily exhibit in other more everyday waking states. And what's particularly interesting about savants is that they have abilities that seem incompatible with, well, let me put it another way, they have various deficits, and given their deficits, you'd think that the abilities couldn't manifest. So, for example, there's a well-known musical savant who's spastic until he sits down to play the piano. There's another one who can barely take care of himself, but he can repair any mechanical device you give to him. So we don't understand how that could be possible. And the reason I don't think we can jump to the conclusion that it has anything to do with the mind working independently of the body is that we have to remember that prodigies don't present us with that exact dilemma, but the fact is prodigies exhibit extraordinary abilities at stages where you wouldn't expect them to be manifesting and without any kind of prior practice.
Well, there are now some intriguing studies being done with these savants, and it's been shown that a lot of them exhibit psychic ability. I mean, card guessing and things of that nature, and they do it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Dr.
Hennessy Powell.
Diane Hennessy Powell's was working with that in that area right now. It's pretty fascinating. So you wonder if some of these, you know, physical impairments they might have might somehow open up channels to communication. We can only speculate, but it really is fascinating.
We've known for some time that various kinds of altered states can be psych-inducive. I mean, there's a long history of hypnotic states being connected with various kinds of ESP. So it may well be that for many people, the ability to manifest psi is state-specific, and it depends on being in certain kinds of non-ordinary waking states or dissociated states.
I mean, you make a good point, you know, when we talk about, you know, the PK, and that is that, you know, we tend to think of these things in terms of obvious macro, you know, noticeable things in the real world, but I mean, you argue that there's strong reason to expect that PK influences most often go unnoticed. There are these things happening all the time, both consciously and unconsciously, and just because we can't observe it doesn't mean that it's not happening. So I think of it also this way in our, you know, in the survival realm. I mean, people may be having all sorts of after-death communications all the time from, you know, the spirit realm. I mean, is that a fair statement? I mean, one
absolutely
seems to go together. It's, yeah,
just like with ordinary clairvoyance or telepathy. I mean, we don't expect ESP experiences to necessarily manifest themselves by announcing themselves ahead of time, like, as if, you know, like a flourish of trumpets internally. There's no reason to think that psychic phenomena happen only for parapsychologists and only when they set out to look for it. I mean, this gets us back to the issue of what the natural history of psychic phenomena might be. If it's happening at all, it's presumably happening when we're not making an effort to study it. And then the question arises, well, what might be its natural function? What might be its natural history? You know, when we've talked about this in the past, I've suggested it might manifest conspicuously in people who are remarkably lucky or unlucky. And that would be one promising domain to look at if we want to try to figure out what psi is doing when we're not officially trying to study it.
Yeah.
But in the case of PK, there doesn't have to be any observable difference between a car crash caused normally and one caused by PK. The only difference would be in their unobservable causal histories.
Hmm. If you don't mind, we'll take another listener call. Roman?
We have Roman on line two. Roman.
Hello, Roman.
Hey, guys. How are you?
All right. How are you?
Not bad. Long time no speak.
Yeah. You're on with the esteemed Dr. Browdy. You have a question for him?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Dr. Browdy. I'm a big fan of both your writing works and your piano playing. You are awesome,
Thank
my
you.
Friend.
Thank you. Thank
yeah,
you.
Absolutely. Hey, I wanted to ask you... I know, like, as of recently, you've been working a lot with Chaim Wege and going to some of the seances and all that. I just would like to see if there's anything that sticks out from your experiences with him that you'd like to share.
Well, you've opened a can of worms.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. Well, let me seize the opportunity then, and bring people up to date on what's been going on. I conducted some more tests with Hello?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I conducted some more tests with Kai back in October of last year. The idea was to follow up on the experiments we did in Austria in 2013. I was hoping we'd get even clearer evidence of phenomena than we got in Austria. That did not turn out to be the case. We got some intriguing phenomena, but no better documentation. The main thing I'd like to say about this is that, first of all, I do believe that some of Kai's phenomena are genuine, particularly the table levitations and some of the lights that and object movements that occur at a distance from Kai when he's under four-limb control. That is, when I'm draped all over him and can feel both his legs and both his arms and hands.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things we do know about Kai is that he has cheated on occasion. I have no direct evidence that he's cheated in any seances he's conducted with me, but the reason this matters is that if we know that Kai has cheated in some experiments and learned some magic tricks, which we've got evidence that he's used, then the question naturally arises, what else might he have learned and practiced on other occasions? It also suggests that his trance is not always genuine. So if he's consciously using some of these magic devices, and not only using them during the seance, but preparing the seance ahead of time. So we know he was using a little device that makes a light move around his vicinity. And he was stashing it behind the cabinet in the seance room on some shelves behind the cabinet. So he had to have planted it there ahead of time. So this was something that he did consciously. And that's
all those apports.
I'm sorry?
When I think of Kai, I think of apports. He's got all these diamonds and rubies and all kinds of gems that pop out of his eye. What do you think of all of that?
Well, the magicians I've consulted are not impressed.
Okay. Because we've seen some video of it actually popping out of his eye, but it's probably because he stashed it there in the first place.
It's certainly possible. And, you know, the problem I've had with Kai is that he really is not prepared to work under the kinds of conditions that would rule out fraud. I mean, I'm open to the fact that Kai may be able to do some of these other things that he claims he can do. He does like to say that he's agreed to every condition I've ever requested, but that's obviously not the case. He refuses to work under infrared, even though once back in 2012 I video recorded in infrared a table levitation of his, an informal seance we were doing. But Kai has not agreed to video recording in infrared. He has not agreed to wear sealed boxing gloves during a cabinet seance, which would make it impossible for him to retrieve something that he stashed in his rectum, which is a live hypothesis for the ectoplasm.
I see. Ooh, okay.
Well,
I discussed all these gory details in two papers in the Journal of Scientific Exploration.
Okay.
You can find those papers on ResearchGate or academia.edu.
Very well. Well,
we're running out of time. Roman, thanks for calling in.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll talk to you guys soon, hopefully.
Talk to you soon. Steve, unfortunately, our time, I don't know where it went. There's about 10 or 15 more things I need to ask you, so I'll just have to call you later.
Okay.
Thank you for being with us. Check out Steve's new book, Crimes of Reason on Mind, Nature, and Paranormal. And if you haven't already secured a copy, Immortal Remains and Gold Leaf Lady, fascinating reading. Thanks, Steve, and talk with you again soon.
Great talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Veronica James, Alex Hanna, Trevor McKinney, Ginger Quinlan, Rich LeBlay, Vince Mattia, Isabel Ginsberg, Diane Archangel, Dorian Malloy, James Rafferty, Fred Feinstein, Matt Mello, Donna Mello, Marianne Pierzga, David Haith, Michael Tim, Glenna Irwin, and Stanley Mullen. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone and to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
a loved one, they're only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.